comes Irving. Drives on Thompson. Irving spins. Puts up the shot. It's good! Kyrie Irving with 3.4 remaining. And the Warriors call timeout. Irving does it again to the Warriors. Porter can't find anybody. He gives it to Wall. Working against Bradley for three. John Wall! What a shot!
He just plays the game, but I'm not going to let them treat us that way. You know, I know Pop's got pedigree and I'm a young rookie, but they're not going to rook us. 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 They're not going to rook us.
You were dead right about the gap between the games. It was almost like people were inventing takes to out-stupid each other.
It was just,
and that was some of the sensible journalists.
And it was space
Some of the sensible journalists, not even the hot take merchants.
Yeah, true. I've got to write a column. I don't know what to do. It's the third day. I literally don't know what to write. And then they would just come up with just hot takey shit that was just sort of, and that was kind of, sort of part of the overwhelming sense of, I mean, this it's been a letdown, but, and you can't blame the Warriors for that, but it does feel like a letdown, doesn't it? It feels like that everyone is kind of not operating it, apart from the Warriors, everybody is not operating at their full potential.
Well, this is where, and I'll admit that I am in the vast minority here, but I take joy in you.
LeBron losing
have a
because
whole,
you're a racist.
Having a whole heap of plans, like you can have really good players, right? There was one year, Queensland hadn't beaten New South Wales a while in the touch, and
I was going to say it certainly wasn't
decided,
in Origin because that would put us back in the 17th century.
So what they decided was they'd basically put in the bulk of the Queensland men's side into the Friday night club competition. Like everyone would go and play for the same club for 1 year.
Oh, like
so
the
that
Broncos
they would get,
always play Friday night football.
Pretty much, yep. And like they just smashed everybody because they had all of the talent. Like there was no other good players in any of the other sides.
I'm interested to see how you make this an analogy for the basketball, given that that team also has all the coaching plans in the basketball.
Well, that's what I mean. It's not quite the same because there are other good teams out there, but they still lost the Origin, is what I'm saying. Like you can have all these great players, and shit can still go wrong. And this is what I wanted to talk about in terms of in the coming years, like and sort of riffing off Howard Beck's piece. In that,
this is the KD didn't really have anybody insulting him when he left the OKC. It was just your imagination piece.
No, I think there were certain pockets, but it wasn't like
it was the entire
LeBron
league. It wasn't okay. There wasn't the Dubs. I mean, he was well and truly getting ragged on.
Yeah, but not like when LeBron came. Like when LeBron did the heat thing. Like he walked into every stadium and they just hated him.
Yeah, but
like,
that was all,
everybody
that was because
hated
he went
him.
he went out of his way to antagonize everybody.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's what he's saying. But I think his point isn't so much that. I think his point is that the culture is now a lot easier to move teams. Like if you want to go,
I don't agree with that point. I don't think that point might be true. I don't think the evidence bears it out. I think that if LeBron hadn't made a spectacle of himself, he would have had about the equivalent level of sledging, if you like, of background level hatred that KD's got now, which is not a small amount. I mean, he gets it. He cops it. Because there is this win on your own, what are you joining your enemies mentality, which seems to pervade the fucking NBA.
He's exactly right, though. In 2 years' time, no one's going to give a fuck.
No,
they'll just
because he'll be out of the league with Liz Frank injuries. this is the underrated thing about Durant. Everyone forgets that he's had. I mean, this year he spent how many games was he out with injuries of various?
That was a strained MCL.
Was that
like,
there were
that
a couple
that
of injuries
to do with his feet?
No, it was two separate incidences. Because he was out just before the playoffs started. Remember, he missed out part of the the first round. Yeah,
but that was they brought him back too quick, and he, like, it's a related injury. It's like hamstring tightness from trying to play when you've still got soreness in your knee and you compensate.
He's also had both his feet give out in various situations. He's a 7-footer. He's very athletic.
Yeah, which his time
might be finite. So I don't blame him for running and getting fucking rings and taking a discount to get more rings if that's what he has to do. But people who are saying, because of this, it's all over and it's 5 years of dominance. Fucking soft pedal the fuck out of that, because it's just not necessarily going to work.
Yeah, well, people said that when Miami won their second one, remember?
People said that. People said that when Nash, Dwight, Kobe, and company all got together at the Lakers.
And look, Steve Kerr, Curry, and those guys, like, have said, for you to, like, I was listening to a podcast with Walton the other day, and he's like, you can have the most talented team, the best coaching staff, the most amazing medical staff, and you still need a degree of luck to win a championship. You need something to break for you, whether it's Kawhi having a freak injury or
you
the
not
Clippers
having
knocking
the... I mean, the fact that you not getting injuries is you not having a Kawhi-style landing on some fucking NHL goon's ankle and foot and doing your ankle. That needs to break right for you. Or you need to have your injuries for your star players to happen at the end of the regular season, not at the start of the third round. I mean, if KD had that injury going into the Spurs series and Kawhi hadn't, now we have a different circumstance, don't we?
So my point is, if we start to see some more super teams pop up, like if we start to see people trying to form, you know, these alliances to fight back.
Which we won't, on the same degree as the Dubs, because they had that unique circumstance with the Dubs. So no one will ever be able to do that on that scale again, just because...
This is the frustrating thing about even good journalists in the NBA going, oh, the league screwed this up. It's like Steph Curry is one of the top three or four players in the league. Like... You can't deny that.
And he is just a different sort of top 10 player that we've ever seen before. He is a trebuchet with perfect range. We've never had one like this before. So that's part of why he is also because they don't understand why he just happens to be the best at the most important skill that has never been as important as it has before.
But he's also on an $11 million a year contract. And like, The amount of things that needed to break right, which is funny considering his ankles using that word, but like the circumstances are almost impossible to repeat. And even then, I just think Curry and Durant and Klay Thompson and Draymond are just the most complementary group of stars that you could... Like if you were going to build a team and say, okay, you know, I'm going to have Durant and Curry, they're my two players... I need two other superstar players to go with them. What are the temperaments I want? Oh, well, I want this guy that can absolutely go off and shoot like crazy. But when he's not shooting well, I want him to be a lockdown defender who can hassle the best point guard, one of the best point guards in the league, and switch on to power
forwards.
And
that's not
a
skill
really
he came
nice.
Into the game with. That's a skill that he's picked up and applied himself to.
But just to have the mindset of being a shooter and not shooting well, but still playing really well and hard on the other end of the floor.
That's good coaching.
And then
I would put a lot of that, all of that, not to take away Clay's fucking, you know, individual
work
ethic and ability to apply himself, but good coaching is what unlocks that. And there'd be plenty of other gunners who would have just gone, well, I'm not getting mine, so get fucked. And Clay would be the kind of mentality that you would expect that from.
And then the fourth player is, you know, this lockdown defender who can defend guards right through to centers, can switch anything, can pass, you know, is this massively skilled passer who doesn't care whether he gets 2 points a game. Like, you know, you can't just put Chris Paul and...
Tristan Thompson doesn't care if he only gets 2 points a game too.
Mm. Well, that's the other thing, like... I've heard quite a few people say, oh, Zaza's just been terrible this series. And he has, offensively. He's been terrible. But they got him for one job and one job only, and that was to make sure Tristan Thompson didn't get into games. He just boxes out Tristan Thompson. Tristan Thompson doesn't get into the game, and all of a sudden the Cavs' fourth best player is rendered essentially, you know, he might as well be Deron Williams for all the goodies.
It was only game three when the Cavs led for all but the last umpteenth of a second, basically.
2 minutes, 18 or something, wasn't it?
That was the first game where the Cavs' big name, big dollar bigs hadn't looked worse than the bargain bin specials that had been picked up out the front of someone's house on hard rubbish day that the Dubs picked up. Really, it was only in game three that before that the Dubs the Cavs could not find a big man to stay on the floor because you know, Love couldn't do it and Thompson couldn't do it, and of course Bogut couldn't do it because he broke after 58 seconds. What a damn shame.
I think Love's played pretty well considering who he's playing against. Like, Golden State is not the best team for him to play against.
You could say that for the whole Cavs. It's a bad match. It's actually this Cavs and these Dubs are not a good matchup.
Mm.
Which is ironic because last year it was, but it was, you know, different parts and different functionalities. No KD.
It all comes back to no KD.
Well, it does. Obviously that's dumb, but that's true. It all comes back to KD.
It all comes back to this amazing offensive player who in the Golden State system is also an amazing defensive player. Like, how many times did he have a massive defensive possession where he either blocked the ball or stole the ball or deflected the ball and then went down the other end and hit a big three or, you know, made an assist for a big shot?
He's now clearly the best player in the NBA. He's better than LeBron. Speaking of shit takes that crop up in fucking series that have too long a gaps between them. I mean, the idea that now LeBron is now KD has usurped LeBron is kind of KD gets a little bit more help from his friends. Thanks very much, the Beatles, than LeBron does right now. I mean, we were talking about this on Twitter this week that Kyrie is kind of weird in that his performance happens in a vacuum. Everything he does, good or bad, happens in a vacuum and has no impact on anybody around him. He could go for 30, he could go for 3, but that is completely independent on everything else that's going on around him. And if you get a good shooting night out of Kyrie like they got in Game 3, that's great. But it's not like it makes everyone else better other than the fact, we've got a bit of scoreboard going on. We know things are going okay. Mm. It's very odd that he's a soloist on a solo list. Thanks very much, Zach DeLaRocha. He is totally independent of anything else that happens on the basketball court around him. I think that's fascinating.
It's almost like he's playing a one-on-one game of basketball within a 5-on-5 game.
It's like his possessions aren't actually with the rest, with him, sort of counted separately from everyone else.
Well, and the opposite of that is Curry, who's obviously got a lot more energy to expend because he's not having to carry the offensive load, is averaging 12 rebounds a game. And that's just hustle.
That's just, isn't it?
Just basically slithering in and stealing a rebound when there shouldn't be one against, you know, someone that's been boxed out or LeBron's a little bit tired or Kyrie's gone to sleep.
But he wasn't always doing that. And it's almost like the Golden State Warriors coaching staff saw what the Rockets were doing for James Harden and for Russ and saw there is actually more to the idea of trying to get your guard to get as many rebounds as possible. There's more to it than just, you know, inflating the stats. It is, you've got the ball in the hand of the best person to lead the counterattack, to lead the fast break, to distribute. It actually supercharges your transition offense in a way that having a big get the ball and then try and pass it out doesn't give you. So it's almost like Golden State saw the advantage in that and deliberately started to try and play for that. Because he's not getting those boards if people aren't boxing out for him.
Well, the possession I was waiting for towards the end of the game, because I just thought the Cavs were going to die.
Yeah, I just thought
they were going to run out of puff.
I had no belief in them at all.
And I think it was about 3 minutes to go. The Cavs were up 6 or 8, I can't remember which. And Love went up for a layup. Draymond got a little bit on it. And it sort of bobbled out, and Curry just got the ball and went coast to coast. because the Cavs defenders just couldn't keep up the pace with him. And that's exactly what you're talking about. He gets the ball and goes because he doesn't have to wait for an outlet pass. He doesn't have to wait for someone to get it to him. He just sees the space and goes for it.
Yeah. That's exactly the intellectual argument behind why Russ and Harden should have got all those defensive rebounds that also helped them inflate their triple-double stats. But there is actually an incremental advantage to it.
I've perversely enjoyed this series. I know that seems strange to say, but
I hate Dan Gilbert. So
yeah, well, that's the other weird thing. Like listening to a few podcasts this week is like everyone's like, in talking about inventing things, and now there's all this talk of LeBron going to one of the LA teams. But
I think we should put all this talk in inverted commas and remind people that with 3 days between games, there's a lot of dead air to, and the game's not being particularly competitive and interesting to talk about. There's a lot of dead air to fill, and there's a lot of fucking shit takes that are hitting the airwaves, including ours in the last 15 minutes of this podcast, which is the Bulls podcast. We've got our station identity. I'm Dr. Yobo, and he's Bezo, and we talk a lot about basketball while the basketball is on. Continue.
The funny thing is, I listen to our podcast as well as all the other basketball podcasts I listened to, and I listened to ours last week, and I'm like, we actually sound quite reasonable. Like, we could be on CBS or ESPN. Like, fuck, our takes aren't as anywhere near as wild as some of these more experienced guys.
We just do shit takes for entertainment's sake. And we do cross-sport takes.
But
we do, like, this is just
getting
like
back
the
to
time.
The, oh, yeah. I don't know how much ESPN basketball, NBA would really enjoy us injecting cricket CBA cricket contract talks into a basketball podcast, but anyway,
wait for the after dark. I've got some cross fucking everything takes for everything.
The fact that the Cavs GM does not have a new contract, and
which is preposterous,
it would be the third time a GM of the Cavs has, like, they don't sack them. It's not like New York, but it seems like they have 2 years and then they go. It's like, come on, guys. You look at the Warriors and you look at the Spurs, and you, if you want to have sustained success, you have to have some sort of, through line somewhere. And it can't just be LeBron. You know, you've got to have a bit of stability somewhere else. I wonder how much LeBron really likes Dan Gilbert and how much he's just tolerating him because it's his home
absolutely
team.
Absolutely tolerating it. Absolutely. Mm. He's absolutely doing the right thing. And if he left again, I mean, Cleveland would chuck its toys. We're talking about this on Twitter earlier today. There'd still be, his fans would burn his jersey, but the difference would be the rest of the NBA would be like, you fucking entitled piss babies. He came back and gave you everything and you didn't support him. Go fuck yourself, Dan Gilbert. Take your Comic Sans, stick it up your ass, set yourself on fire, throw yourself in the fucking lake.
Mm. Which team do you think LeBron will buy?
Because he will buy a team. Well, it'll be whichever team's for sale. This is kind of why.
Absolutely going to buy a team. I wonder whether the NBA would manipulate things for him to buy a side. Not that he would not pay fair money for it, but like if he indicated that he wanted to, like, obviously
I think that'd help him partner up. Grant Hill's bought into Orlando, hasn't he?
Yeah, Atlanta. Yep, he's a part owner of Atlanta.
Was it Atlanta or Orlando? I can't remember which.
No, Atlanta. No, it's Atlanta.
And obviously, there's other. I mean, Michael bought into Charlotte, and that was pitched as, oh, because Charlotte, North Carolina, where he played college basketball. I don't think he really gives that much of a fuck, to be perfectly honest. But it's. He's not going to buy Cleveland because Dan Gilbert has lots of money because he's a predatory loan company owner. Those Quicken Loans are the sort of people who offer you loans on your credit card, if your credit to transfer your credit card balance. They're those kind of pricks. So Dan Gilbert literally is the worst kind of human being in the world, even by the standards of American billionaires, which is not great.
I reckon a cool one would be if in... Like, how many years do we think LeBron's got left? 4, 5?
Well, with modern medicine,
maybe a bit longer. But it'd be nice when he retired if they announced him as the inaugural owner of the expansion Seattle Sonics. That would be cool.
Well, yeah, that was actually probably more likely. I mean, that's how David Beckham's getting into the MLS, is through an expansion Miami team. And that means that no one else gets pissed off. And also, the rest of the league benefits from the fact that the expansion team has a bit of buzz around it. Having said that, the MLS are doing rather well with their expansion teams. They're getting, they've recently expanded to Orlando and Atlanta and Minneapolis, and are getting really good crowds and really good grassroots support, which is something the A-League needs to fucking control, you know, control C, control V, because the MLS does do that stuff really well.
See, I was thinking about the superstar thing, right? If you're Anthony Davis and your next contract's coming up, like, you've made a shitload of money, at what point do you get sick of just being on crap teams and you just go, look, I'll take $10 million a year less and go and play for whoever the best side is, you know?
So New Orleans would be a team, just on your previous point, New Orleans would be a team that could be on the market, because, I mean, they had a shit owner and then were owned by the league and then were bought by the family that owns the football team, who are massively dysfunctional. The old man who's the patriarch is dottery, and the kids are fighting over it. It's a little bit like an even more dysfunctional version of the Buss family. And of course, the football side makes a lot more money than the basketball side, because the football side, in football, you're only, you know, a toss of the coin away from being relevant again, particularly in the conference that they're in with the Saints. The NFC South is a fucking tire fire, so they don't have to do much to be better.
Yeah, well, I think, was it Beck said today on Zach Lowe's podcast, you know, if Davis left, then that side just
literally
might,
Beck. It was saying there's a devil's haircut in his mind.
Fold under its own weight, you know.
And it wouldn't be the first time.
I just think that those superstars, like, if, you know, KD wins this, and those superstars that go, okay, I've made a fair chunk of money, especially the smart ones that have got a whole heap of money invested, why don't I go and play for the Celtics? Why don't I go and play for Philly when Philly's up, or Minnesota when Minnesota, like, whoever's the up and coming team, and just go, I'm just going to go and slot myself into this super side.
Yeah, but it's much easier to make that decision when the super side is the Warriors, who'd won, who'd been to two finals in a row. I mean, that's much easier to make that decision. I mean, second-guessing KD's decision is kind of weird, because I can't think of too many people who wouldn't have made that decision.
Well, the other thing is,
Russell Westbrook would have made that fucking decision.
He's actually pretty good mates with those guys. Like, it's not like you're, you know, going to join a superstar team where you sort of don't even know the guys that well, and you know, like, essentially like the Lakers, Nash, Kobe, Howard situation, where it was like three big names but just did not mesh well together. And that's what I'm interested to see, whether some stars try and jam themselves into super sides and it just goes horribly, horribly wrong.
Well, it probably will, because it'll be jamming people together who don't fit, because the circumstances will never be as favourable as they were for the Warriors. Someone will have to be taking less money, and someone will have to be under duress, and somebody will be more desperate than the rest of them. And those pressures will, at the moment, those pressures don't exist in the Dubs. The fact that some people have been paid and some people haven't been paid isn't a problem. When that is a problem, then it turns into a problem on the court.
Well, and the other thing is too, you've got four guys that essentially, probably KD's the least of them, but four guys that essentially don't care that much about touches. Like, they get their touches
at the moment,
but it's not like, yeah, that's right, and things could change. Well, you know, when you're winning 67 games and not losing a single game in the finals, things are probably pretty peachy.
And don't underestimate that too. I know that people have been saying, oh, you know, a 16-0 thing, is that important to them? That's fucking important to them. I mean,
fucking nice. If you don't think it is, Thompson said so. Go and watch Game 3, because Game 3 is the classic game where, in normal NBA reality, they would just come out a little bit soft against the home team. Look at Game 3 against Cleveland last year. They got jumped 24-2 or some ridiculous lead they let Cleveland. And Cleveland came out hard in that game. Like, they came out like they were like, we really want to win with this. And you saw Golden State step up and go with them. And they're like, we know that we just have to weather this first quarter, and then we're in the, you know, then we're in the game. That they were absolutely locked in on not losing that game because, you know, they're a bit complacent, or they felt like they were the better team and they could just blow them out. They're like, no, we're not making the same mistakes we made last year. We want to win every fucking time we step on the court.
And it is important to
until these guys have gone away.
It is important to them. I've heard some podcasts recently say, oh, look, they haven't talked about whether it's important to them. Bullshit, they have talked about it. Because when Clay was shooting fucking awful up until game three, they asked him, you know, going through a slump, you're right. And he said, look, if I continue to go 0 from 20 and we go 16-0, I'm going to be happy. That it is literally, it is something they're thinking about. He didn't mean to say that, but he did. And it is definitely, they see, you know, it's the 73 wins of this season.
Well, what's better to wipe out the fact that you were up 3-1 and you lost than to go up
3-1 again?
Well, it's to go and do something that no one has ever done in the whole history of the NBA. No one, you know, the Chicago Bulls never did it. The great Lakers sides never did it. The great Celtics side never did it. Now, again, they had to have things go incredibly lucky for them. You know, they were pretty much losing that first game against the Spurs.
They needed the reverse luck of what made them lose last year.
Yes, but you've got to also ride that luck. And I think that was the difference between this year and last year is last year they just thought that everything was with them and they didn't have to work as well. This year they're like, oh, we've got the opportunity. Let's fucking ride it while it's there. You know, ride the karma hard while it's coming for
us. But you know what, though? It doesn't matter what they do this year. The 3-1 jokes will never die because this is NBA Twitter. And the 3-1 jokes are a lore unto themselves. They are a meme, and the energy of memes is self-perpetuating and will continue until the heat death of the universe. There will be people tweeting in 2037 when we're all underwater that, you know, never forget the Warriors blew a 3-1 lead in the playoffs. Because, you know, people who have got an inflated view of themselves deserve to be pulled down a few pegs.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, some of the Golden State fucking fans that have been retweeted into my timeline make me a lot less...
Just entitlement.
Whining about, you know, like, just the stupid shit. Appreciate the fact that you've got an awesome team and you're really lucky to get them, and appreciate the fact that you're beating one of the greatest players. Like,
but he's choking.
The funny thing is LeBron.
LeBron
has only enhanced his reputation in this playoffs.
Well, I don't know about that, because there's been plenty of shit takes about how he choked and how he shouldn't have thrown that pass to Kyle Korver and blah, blah, blah.
You know,
fucking everyone's still rolling.
Do you know why they're called shit takes? Do you know why they're called shit takes? Because they're shit. Like, have a look at his stats.
That's
his
science,
usage rate. I have not always enjoyed LeBron's attitude. Like, I think he can be a bit, passive aggressive is the word, I suppose. You know, the way he sort of, the way he tries to lead. Like, I think he's got a really weird leadership style. But you can't fault him as an actual physical player. Like, the dude fucking gives it his all. And he's not a Kobe type, I'm going to gun until I die sort of player. Like, he made a pass to one of the greatest three-point shooters the league's seen.
It's got a bit.
You would expect him to hit that open shot. Like, what are you supposed to do?
If he passed
the dude was
Josh
fucking
Smith,
tired.
Then we'd have a discussion to have.
That's right.
Not J.R. Smith. Josh Smith. Then we have a problem. But it was only the best fucking three-point shooter in history. The White Mormon. The underwater rock holder. I mean, what the fuck do you want? He's been quiet, Korver, but his reputation precedes him. And also, here's the thing. The Warriors, just quietly, are better than the Cavs. So they should win every fucking game they play against them.
Yeah. And the only reason they were in that game was basically LeBron. Like, the stat that just should shut everybody up is he played 46 minutes. They were plus 7 in 46 minutes. He sat for 2 minutes of the game. 2 minutes. Yep. And those 2 minutes, Kyrie and Love were on the floor, the other two, you know, superstars on that side, and they were minus 12.
Yeah, that's minus 12 amazing.
In 2 fucking minutes. Like, he just must look at that stat and go, what do I have to do?
It's not that Kyrie and Kevin are bad players. They're just not suited to being around him. And enough of this, oh, you know, LeBron elevates everyone around him. Some people you just can't elevate. There is just no elevation to be fucking made with these guys. Kyrie, who operates in an independent fucking reality from everybody around him.
Well, I think that's the thing with Kyrie, is he's not the sort of guy that...
reality where the earth is flat, just so you remember.
he's not going to take 4 scrubs and make them into better players. And
no,
and
we saw that version of the Cavs, and it got Mike Brown fired. Again.
Yeah. Mike Brown must be having the greatest time.
Mike Brown is the Balls Podcast Coach of the Year. not for anything he's done on the court, but for all the checks he's getting. If we keep getting them checks, all-star.
It'll be interesting to see whether he just settles into... Like, I reckon it'd be a pretty good life being one of those sought after, experienced NBA assistant coaches. Like, you know, Ron Harper's obviously
carved out an awesome career. Particularly at a place where your head coach is half a chance of taking half the season off. Because, unfortunately, I don't think what Kerr's got, this leaking spinal fluid shit, that's not going away, which is awful for him.
Yeah, that's...
But it does mean you need a... It's like being the backup goalkeeper. You're better off being behind somebody who's going to give you a bit of game time, because they spend a lot of time out of the big chair. So,
well, it's interesting too that lead assistant coach, their job seems to be the Draymond whisperer, because that was
Walton's job.
That was Walton's job, and it seems like it's Mike Brown's job. Like, every time Draymond comes off the court drawing at the refs, it's Mike Brown that pulls him aside and has a little word to him and calms him down and soothes the beast for another 10
minutes. Because Draymond sees himself as one of the assistant coaches as well, if not the head coach. So you're on field general. You know, you need to have a debrief with them. But and Mike Brown's the right sort of dude for that job. I'm actually, that's one thing I'm glad about with the Dubs, is that he's succeeding. And we have talked a bit about this before, but I kind of feel that he got fucked over by the Cavs twice, and it is kind of nice to see him, and the Lakers, and it is nice to see him getting a bit of success. Also, he's a good dude, so you like seeing that.
I think the funny thing is, their owner's stupid statements aside, I think they're a pretty well, their organization seems to be staffed with a lot of good dudes. Like, I saw a tweet today of their general manager out on the floor. I think he was like rebounding for, Bob Myers rebounding for one of the coaches, but he's wearing like these like Rafael Nadal 3-quarter tennis shorts and a Warriors training shirt. And someone said, which of the other 28 general managers in the league do you think would be out on the court during practice, you know, rebounding for the team in this sort of getup? They seem to have a lot of practical, down-to-earth sort of people in the organization, I guess.
Would you say they're disrupting the front office Silicon Valley style?
Yeah, and maybe.
If you are, I would have to cancel this podcast, because disruption is the sort of thing that makes you want to stay with people's head in the fucking shovel.
Miles ahead. Oh, well, it's...
Hashtag light years ahead.
The one that... There's a... It's not triggered. There's a word that if I see cuck, it drives me fucking insane. It has to be one of the most stupid words in the English language.
Well, it's not a word in the English language. It's some fucking alt-right bastardization of cuckold, which is a fucking cuckoo who fucking gets someone else to bring up its fucking eggs. It's from that. It's like, you like having dudes watch your wife get fucked. Which is such a fucking a pissant all boys school sledge. It is such a anybody who's ever used that for that word as an insult has revealed more about themselves than they have about the person they're sledging in every instance.
Speaking of stupid administrators, Cricket Australia have put their foot in it again. Did you see this?
They just can't stop, won't stop.
I made a joke about, I think, the work experience kid is running the negotiations for Cricket Australia, and...
I think it's the anti-union Thundercut who's just trying to... The union crusher is trying to do it.
But, like, when Dave Warner is making sense that Cricket Australia...
I mean, that's the giveaway. Dave Warner's making sense.
Because he's like,
hold the back page. Cancel all my fucking appointments. Dave Warner's making sense, people.
Because he's like, we're out here playing for Australia. We're trying to win what is supposedly, and I think it's a stupid tournament, but it is supposedly the second biggest one-day.
It has a trophy.
Thing you can win. We are preparing for a game we have to play tomorrow, and you're sending us 10-minute fucking videos trying to break the, essentially like a strike-breaking video.
Not contacting the contact person at the union, but emailing everybody else around the side to try. It's amateur hour.
It's 1970s fucking bullshit is what it is.
1920s bullshit. I'm surprised I haven't got in there with fucking thugs to break people's ankles.
Well, the thing is, I think it's almost like they don't understand that social media exists, because as soon as that shit happens, all the players are out in the public. Like,
they're like, look at this shit.
That's a thing. Like, the reaffirmation of, hey, we're all together. You guys are fucking idiots. I can't believe you're so stupid. You're trying. Like, what did they think was going to happen? Did they not think that it was going to get out and that they were going to look stupid?
No, they genuinely think the Australian cricket team are as stupid and venal as they're made out to be by certain elements of the press.
Yeah.
But the thing is that it's such an obvious and clear PR win to say, no, we're not doing it for ourselves. We're doing it for grassroots players. We're doing it for women cricketers. We're doing it for everyone. You had all this money that you didn't spend on the grassroots, and now you're trying to take our money away? You can go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
And when Cricket Australia lose this, because they're going to lose this, it's going to be hilarious.
Delicious. Delicious is what it's going to be. Because the thing is that the players know is Cricket Australia can't afford to put 12 club cricketers out against England, because that's what they're essentially going to have to do. They'll have no access to state players. Yeah. They'll have no access to the
I
national
think they
players.
Believe they're going to be able to find some scabs. I think they're banking on being able to find some scabs. But they don't have a fucking counter plan. Whereas it's very clear the ACA have got fucking countermeasures up the fucking wazoo. They know what they're doing. They've got plans. They've got strategies. They know exactly what happens when the contract goes null. They've got everything sussed. Cricket Australia just have shit videos. And the Daily Telegraph.
How's it going to be for Cricket Australia when, I don't know, who's a middling Shield cricketer that might jump ship?
I don't want to verbal anyone, because I reckon they're all pretty staunch.
Yeah, that's right. So, some guy that we've never heard of's opening the batting for Australia and gets reamed, while Dave Warner's playing in the, the Pakistan or the Caribbean T20 League and scoring 100 off 49 balls, and every paper is going to be, oh, look how good a form Dave Warner's in. But wouldn't it be great to have him in the Ashes?
Some fucking grunting gurnard. He goes, man, fucking play for Australia. I mean, there was somebody in Peter Layla's mentions doing that. Something, Warner can't even bat. And someone said, he's made like 900s in his last 12 innings, fucking gurnard.
He's like, him and Smith are like two of the highest strike rates of hundreds per innings, in cricket history. It's just, and it's really interesting seeing, because I did jump in Peter Layla Layla's mentions and have a look at some of the responses.
I jumped at his mentions when he tried to compare LeBron's treatment with Adam Goods. Like LeBron was complaining about having niggers painted on his house, and Peter Layla said, "Ah, but I bet he's never been booed." You know, like imagine if he got booed like Adam Goods. He didn't actually mention Adam Goods, but he said, "Imagine if he got booed." And I said, "Dude, you know that he gets booed like everywhere, like his old team, like the fans of his old team,
they burned his jersey in the street,
and he's." His former owner basically treated him like a slave. And he's like, "Oh no, I don't watch basketball, so I don't really know." And it's kind of, yeah. Why the fuck did you say anything then?
No,
but no, he's been good on this.
But Bredig particularly has just been.
Layla's been good because he's from the Australian, and you wouldn't expect the Australian. Right. You'd expect the Australian to fall in line with Cricket Australia, as Channel 10 have when they trotted out Adam Gilchrist to say, "Oh, it's a pretty good deal." Gilchrist is low-key the pariah of ex-Australian cricketers. Nobody likes him. And it's not surprising at all. He fucking, while trousering broadcaster and sponsor Cash, you know, trousering money for his latest fucking Castrol sponsorship deal, he's saying that, "Oh, you know, it's a really good deal and you should take it." Go fuck yourself, Gilchrist.
It's interesting the media angle that the paradigm of, because I was thinking about the UK elections where the right wing papers in the UK sort of ran this massively hard Brexit line, like, you know, everything we say you guys are going to believe and just roll over,
literally
and do,
basically and saying Jeremy Corbyn was a communist who was going to have terrorists, who was in bed with terrorists. I mean, literally said that on the front cover of The Sun, on the day before the election. And Jeremy Corbyn's in as good a position to set up a government as the current PM is, as we record. Probably will have changed by the time you hear this podcast.
But the thing is, I think a lot of people are going, "Hey, we don't have to listen to what newspapers tell us. Perhaps we could get our information from this thing called the internet. We could probably look around and find some interesting ideas that aren't pushed down from certain, you know, large media conglomerates that
exactly
have..."
Exactly right, yes. And that's exactly, I mean, there's been a lot of narrative about the fact that one of the big elements in this British election was the fact that young people, you know, under 30s, under 25s, turned out to vote. And they don't read the fucking Mail and the fucking Sun and the fucking Telegraph and the fucking Times. They don't read these newspapers owned by oligarchs that push hate and fear. So as a result, they don't vote out of hate and fear. They vote out of hope that something could be better. And that'll be drummed out of them because, you know, it always does as you get older. But exactly as you say, Cricket Australia are like the Conservatives in this respect. They seem to think that just feeding the message down their tried and true truth makers is going to save the day. It's not. It won't. Mm. And it isn't.
Yeah, and like I think Cricket Australia are working under a sort of 1990s, 2000 media landscape where they just think, you know, we've got our friends in the media and they're going to push our line and all the public are going to read it and go, "Oh, yes, Cricket Australia are doing the right thing for grassroots cricket." And
Channel 9 have been quiet, though.
Mm.
And that kind of reflects that Channel 10 are more desperate for the BBL than the BBL are desperate for Channel 10. Sorry, Channel 10 are more desperate for the cricket than the cricket are desperate for Channel 10.
Now, again, this might have been from Peter Layla, but I think 9 have basically said, "If you want us to keep shoveling huge amounts of money into Test cricket and One Day cricket, we want the Big Bash as well. We want the whole pie," which is interesting considering that the sort of big stick they've wielded over Australian cricket for such a long time. But you and I have talked about how the NBA and some smaller niche sports, but everyone is moving towards, "Let's control our own destiny." Yeah. You know, if anything, let's become our own media company and
do in-house production.
If you yeah. Yeah, like do in-house production, and if Channel 7 actually want to broadcast the Friday night game or the Saturday night game or the Sunday night, we don't really give a fuck. We'll sell you the rights to broadcast that game on free-to-air, but we'll also sell it through our app, and we'll sell it through, you know, Apple TV and Google, you know, Google Play and every, you know, every other 50 million different ways you can get media these days.
Ten are also becoming more and more just an outreach arm of Fox. I mean, we saw this with the A-League Saturday night games. So the free-to-air game used to be on SBS. But from next year on, it'll be on 10, and it'll basically just be an offshoot of the Fox coverage. It'll literally just be the Fox graphics, the Fox coverage, the Fox callers. It'll just be basically a replay of, or it might be live, of the Fox coverage, and Fox will just be using that to drive traffic to their subscription model. But I mean, 10, also 10 are very much on the brink of complete annihilation. So you can almost see why they're more desperate to appease Cricket Australia than anybody else in this particular stoush.
See, the thing I find with 10, right, is really interesting is, and this ties into the Super Rugby, like there wasn't a Big Bash 10 years ago, but like Channel 9 has had cricket and rugby league, and for a brief time they had AFL, but Channel 7's pretty much had AFL. Channel 10 had a crack at the AFL and increased their ratings and their popularity massively. Yeah, and like I have to say, that was my golden years of liking the AFL, because Channel 10's coverage of the AFL was so non-traditional.
And Channel 10 have always done motorsport well. They in the 20 years ago, they took on motorsport in a big way, and it helped them build their sports credentials up to a massive extent when they took on the V8 supercars. And then they got Formula One and MotoGP and all these other things, and they've always done it well for a free-to-air channel.
But the one I thought they missed the boat on was, I think they should have tried to get Super Rugby, because it's in that sweet spot of weekend winter sport.
Yeah. I've got a vague recollection that they had rugby many, many years ago. Because Gordon Bray has worked for everybody.
But like, what they should have done is got, like, it's no use just having the tests. But if you have Super Rugby and tests, then all of a sudden you've got a narrative for that whole ratings period of the year that you can push.
Yeah, three nights. You know, you can talk about three nights doesn't get your ratings. You've got to have those people rocking up every week.
But you can have Super Rugby, and you can, if you've got Super Rugby and Test Rugby, all of a sudden you can do what Channel 9 does with the rugby league, where you've got the NRL and you've got State of Origin. So while you're watching the NRL, you can talk about selections for State of Origin, because that's your product. Yeah. And that's the weird thing about Test cricket is on Channel 9, or One Day cricket on Channel 9, is they do not mention the Big Bash at all. It's like if Dave Warner pulls a hamstring in the first over of the game, and there's a Big Bash game on tomorrow night with the two leading, you know, Chris Lynn versus Head. And it's like,
yeah, but that's not a selection trial for the test, because you don't want.
No, but it is for One Day. But if it was One Day cricket, it would be like, do you know what I mean? Like, at least it would be, because the One Day cricket's on at the same time as the Big Bash. Like, but it's almost like the Big Bash doesn't exist. Channel 9 will not talk about the Big Bash at all.
That's a production choice, because the Big Bash will talk about the Channel 9 product.
That's right. If your little brother,
that's entirely
it's easier to talk about Big Brother, isn't it?
Well, it's also, I mean, there's no reason. I think Channel 9 were just trying to pretend that Channel 10 didn't exist, and if they if they cross their fingers, it might actually happen.
You don't have to pretend that hard.
Like, pretty much.
All right, what other sporting takes have you got for me?
So, a little bit like the NBA season, the Champions League had a shit final that ruined it for the entire year, but it shouldn't actually. The Real Madrid beat the piss out of Juventus, and Cristiano Ronaldo and Sergio Ramos had a really good time, which is disappointing because they're both scum humans. But so it was a bit NBA season-esque, but a bit like, we have to remember this when the Dubs win everything, is that, you know, a shit final doesn't invalidate all the season-long fun. And there was lots of cool stuff that happened in the Champions League this year. It was Leicester's run to the quarterfinals. There was the ridiculous PSG-Barca and Man City-Monaco and knockout games. There was a German team, which we've talked about previously in the group stages. So it's, what do they say? Don't cry because it's ended, you know, laugh because it happened, or whatever the fuck that saying is that I can't remember at this stage because I've been drinking too much. And that's basically the end of the football season, apart from various age group. There's Under-20 World Cup is on. There'll be an Under-21 European Championships pretty soon. There's various other tournaments going on. Football never seems to stop, which is fine by me.
Hey, I was going to mention that I think Delhi is the more popular Australian basketball player over Bogut, because I saw a lot more Australian celebrities.
Bogut's a cunt? Could that be it?
tweeting random support of the Cavs than they were for the Warriors. And I just went, I wonder whether that's because people like Delhi more than Bogut. It's quite possible.
And they're not aware that neither of them play for either team anymore. Oh, did you catch the Weekend Australians list of Australia's sports MVPs? It was literally seven dudes and a horse. No women.
Horse race.
Seven dudes and a horse.
Yeah, it's not like we have any decent Australian
sportsmen. No, it's not like we have like the reigning world surfing champion, and you know, and none of this stuff is important. None of this is most valuable. A fucking horse. I don't even know if the horse was a girl or not.
Which horse was?
Winks. I don't even know the fuck.
Winks. I don't know.
Most valuable in that it makes fucking value for bookmakers and connections and shit. Horse racing is the worst shit in the world.
Pat's always, he comes from a racing family, like not a betting family, but like an actual family that has involvement in horse racing.
You got more respect for that.
And he's always wanted to come on the podcast and defend horse racing. I'm like, and I reckon from his perspective, it's probably
noble. It's the sport of kings.
Yeah.
No, it's fair. But look, if you set aside the animal cruelty element of it, that's fine. But the problem is it only exists as a thing because people bet money on it.
Mm. Which, you know, I think the NFL's a little bit that way, isn't it? It seems like it exists more for... I know the NRL's getting...
Now, also because white dudes are on top. It's the one sport where white dudes are better than black dudes. And I think that's really important to America because all the quarterbacks are white and most of the coaches are white. And that's why America loves it so much, because that's their idea of how race structure should work. Whereas in the NBA, you can't say that. I mean, even all the best players are black, and some of the best coaches are black. So,
yep.
Welcome back to Race Politics 101 with Associate Professor Yobbo.
Did we have a Formula One race last week?
We did not. We got one next week. We got one coming up this week with in Montreal, where McLaren are getting more and more. The rhetoric is getting steeper and steeper in terms of get your shit together, Honda, or you can go fuck yourself. The head of McLaren was quoted as saying things like, effectively the relationship was at breaking point, and he was asked, could you win as a customer? And of course, Ron Dennis, who was the previous head of McLaren, was saying things like, "No, we have to have to partner up with a manufacturer because we can't win as a customer of Mercedes, because that's who they were previously. Because you never quite get the best stuff when you're a customer, and also you don't get the advantage of designing the engine and the car at the same time to have the best possible aero and packaging and stuff." But Zak Brown, the new head of McLaren, basically said, "Yeah, we could win as a manufacturer. We've done it. We could win as a customer, no problem at all." Basically, it's Honda, get your shit together or go fuck yourself. Honda was supposed to have a big engine update ready for Montreal, which is not going to turn up for Montreal. So
who were the engine manufacturers for F1 now? Honda and Mercedes?
No, Mercedes, Honda, Ferrari, of course. and Renault.
So who does Red Bull's engines?
Renault still do Red Bull's engines, even though Red Bull and Renault had such a blow up a few years ago that they no longer put Renault's name on the engine. They call it they have a badging deal with Tag Heuer, the watch people.
So what?
But it is
it off and put a sticker over
pretty
it.
Pretty much. They put a different set of cam covers on it, and they put a different sticker on the engine cover. And they get the same engines as the Renault factory team, but they are basically a customer team, and they're the proof that you can win as a customer team because for as long as you know, for a lot of the time that Red Bull were winning,
they've not had their own engines. Well,
they've never had their own engines.
They've got
a technical partnership with Aston Martin, but Aston Martin have never made engines either. I mean, they generally get their engines as a car manufacturer. Most of their fleet has been powered by an engine that they got built for them by Cosworth, which involved taking two Ford Mondeo V6s and bolting them together to make a 6-litre V12. That's basically underpinned most Aston Martins for the past sort of 10 years or more.
What Red Bull should have to do is they should have to make a car that runs on Red Bull. Now that would be
more powerful than anything.
Well, according to their marketing,
I've seen something that gets powered by Red Bull. It's called first year engineering student during exam week.
Now this is where I will insert. I'm on a boat, so I'll mark this down at 55 minutes. But
I'm on a boat. I'm on a boat. Everybody look at me because I'm sailing on a boat.
I want to talk America's Cup because
why? Are you from New Zealand? Nobody gives a fuck about America's Cup except for New Zealanders, and even then they don't because the New Zealand boat broke and got fixed with fucking fencing wire or something because Kiwi number 8 wire Spirit, which is apparently Kiwis.
I have lots of questions. Why do the boats fly now? Because
they're basically Formula 1. So there was a rule change a couple of years ago, and they basically turned them into Formula 1 cars. And to be honest, that's what's going on here, is that they now plane and aero is more important than anything else. And that's why major racing teams are involved in the design and building of most of these boats. Like Adrian Newey from Red Bull has been massively involved in some of them. ProDrive, who used to run Benetton and have run race teams for years, are involved with Ben Ainslie's operation, I think. A lot of this is down to... It's got nothing to do with boats and everything to do with
aerodynamics. So it's basically the Formula One of the sea now.
It is. So it's got nothing to do with
anything. Because the other thing I wanted to know
is... And yet New Zealand still thinks, New Zealand, NZL, fucking wave the flag. Like, it isn't fucking 1995. There aren't cunts in red socks, boys. We're over that. Nobody else is doing this. Why do you care? And then I remember, they still care about rugby. So I don't really know what to tell you.
The other thing that I noticed was they're all wearing body armor,
They
seem to be riding riding exercise bikes while they race.
Yeah. So at least
they're staying fit.
All the frigging and the rigging, you know, you can't just do the grinding with your hands. You got to do it with your legs because there's a lot more grinding to be done. And if you get thrown, if one of those things stops, you're getting hurled at a fucking. You could hit something very hard.
Oh mate,
very fast.
They were absolute. Like I used to like. I'll admit. I loved the old test lunchtime. Fuck the cricket show. The cricket show can go in the bin. The glory days of Channel 9.
18-foot skiffs. I know exactly what you're going to say.
18-foot skiffs at lunchtime. Yeah. Because
doing exhibition races.
It was an actual, like there was a tour.
I know, but it was basically an exhibition. It was edited for television. You know what we're talking about 25 years ago.
Yes. But it was fucking glorious. My dad and I used to sit, like, no matter how bad the test was, because a lot of this was back in the days when the Windies were, you know, destroying the fucking...
Yeah, I remember the year I remember watching a lot of that stuff. In a weird way, I had some friends who were into sailing, so we used to watch the boat races as much. But it was the 93-94 South African and New Zealand series.
I think my dad was a competitive sailor in the 60s, 50s or 60s. He used to race sabots or, you know, small boats. Yeah, and we loved it. So, like I'm down with highly fast sailboats, but these fucking American Cup things are like next. It is like Formula One.
It literally is because they're not sails. They're
next
wings.
Level shit.
Fucking wings. The only thing I can say.
Let's get all the power that we can possibly get into one point and then put it on the water. That'll be fun.
The one thing that's in his favour is that the software they use to do, I don't know whether they do this on the coverage you see, but there's special software they use to plot where the boats are and who's who's actually in front. Yeah. Dunedin. It's a company in Dunedin that came up with that called Animation Research. So that's something that we invented, and by we I mean somebody in the same city as I am, and took to the world.
Close enough.
We're making money out of it.
You probably drunk beer next to someone from that company.
They used to be in the same building as I've worked in the same building as them. So, but shouts to them. They're probably going to make more of an impact on the America's Cup, the Louis Vuitton, than the Emirates Team New Zealand will, because they're still stuck in this 1995 Sir Peter Blake Red Sox mentality. Woohoo!
So the only other take I had was I figured out a way to fix the All-Star game, which is that they pick the All-Star teams, and then Adam Silver picks teams of three, and you have a 3-on-3 white man can't jump style basketball tournament instead of the All-Star game.
Yeah, I think that would work, because isn't that what they're doing in the off-season though, with old washed up dudes like Ricky Davis and Steven Jackson?
Yeah, Ice-T.
God,
tea
I hope
and...
that's televised somewhere, because that
it is.
That
I think
want to be on an ESPN or some kind of equivalent thing. And shouts to the New Zealand being the only country that gives a fuck about rugby. It's probably a good time to send a Lions tour down. So the Lions tour is going really well. The Lions have played three games so far. They played shit against in every all three of them, and they lost to the Auckland Blues. So
the worst Super Rugby side in New Zealand.
Yeah, I think they are. And now they've got to play the Crusaders and the Highlanders in coming weeks. Now, admittedly, Warren Gatland, who's a good coach, he's probably never going to be All Blacks coach because he spent too long as the other, you know, as the coach of the Wales and so forth. But he's competent enough to be the All Blacks coach. A bit like Robbie Deans. What the fuck ever happened to Robbie Deans? It's like he's been written out of history.
Australian rugby killed him,
pretty much. His career is... I hope he's out making money in France or somewhere. Because he was a good coach. He was a very good coach for the Crusaders. Mind you, if you got... Having the Crusaders talent base is like having the Warriors talent base. It's hard to be a bad coach.
I think he's the... You know, like... Time and time again, you hear good coaches everywhere say you only succeed in a job as a coach if you've got the support of the front office. You know, and I really don't think Robbie Deans ever really had the support of Australian rugby.
I don't think anybody ever
always,
does, do they? I mean, look at the track record.
No, that's the thing.
There is
like,
no
if
front
it's a
office.
Queensland,
there is no.
If there's
just a whole bunch
if
of blazer
you
wearing
a Queenslander that. If you pick a Queenslander, the New South Wales people at head office hate you. If you pick a New South Wales person, the Queensland people hate you. If you pick a New Zealander, everybody hates you. It's just dysfunctional city is what it is.
I mean, I would be more, if you asked me to bet today, what is more likely, Australia winning the World Cup or the Australian Rugby Union disbanding, bankrupt, I would say the second. Because they just,
well, there
it's
was
never
a,
happened.
There were, there was a thing today basically saying that their whole administration is under pressure to resign because of they lost their largest sponsor.
They need to professionalise. They professionalised the players. They've never professionalised the fucking administrators. They're still the same. And Netball Australia have had the same problem. We talked about this a few months ago.
Absolutely. That is the classic amateur sport moving into the professional era, trying to push back and retain that amateur power base.
The players are professionals, the administrators are amateurs. And that's exactly the problem that these sports are going to have. And when a sport that is entirely professional like the AFL comes along, netball is just going to get fucking strip mined. It's going to, every leaf is going to be ripped off the tree. And they'll have no one else to blame but themselves.
Yep.
Isn't that a positive thing to leave on?
I know you've got lots of Beatles takes. So should we have a small breaking?
I think the Volkswagen new Beetle was a really bad idea. Second generation was better, but that was ironically because it was more like a VW Golf than it was a this pathetic fucking retro thing.
That might be the best Beetle to say.
Nowhere near as successful as the new Mini, although the new Mini are in danger of endangering their legacy by doing the same thing. And then next weekend, Dr. Yucca talks shit about cars. We'll talk shit about cars. Good night to you.
See you, dog.
Dog?